At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.
Welcome to the Casual Temple Podcast. This is episode 47, and I'm your host, Marilee Duffy. At the Casual Temple, our mission is to discover our connection to the unseen world of spirit and how that empowers us to know our true selves. Want to support our journey? Subscribe and leave a star review on your favorite podcast platform. We love hearing from you, so visit casualtemple.com to share your thoughts. Join our mailing list for a chance to win a free aura reading with me, Marilee. We pick a winner every month, and your name stays in until you win. This week, our most awesome guest is Lane Wilkin. Lane is a mababatok, or traditional Filipino tattooist, as well as a cultural historian and author. In this episode, we dive deep into Lane's journey, from an unexpected beginning as a Mormon missionary in Hawaii to becoming one of the leading voices in Filipino cultural tattooing. We explore the spiritual and cultural significance of batok, the ancient connections that emerge during tattoo ceremonies, and the wisdom carried through these sacred markings. Get ready for the enlightening conversation about identity, lineage, and the power of reclaiming indigenous traditions. Join us on the Casual Temple, where the past is present. Welcome to the Casual Temple. This week, we are so privileged to host a most awesome guest, Lane Wilkin. Lane is a mababatok, or a traditional Filipino tattooist, author of two books, Filipino Tattoos, Ancient to Modern, and The Forgotten Children of Maui, and is a cultural historian, particularly in the realm of Filipino traditional tattooing and indigenous spiritual practices. His work sheds light on the symbolism and stories behind these tattoos, helping individuals reconnect with their roots and honor their Filipino identity. Lane has dedicated his life to uncovering and revitalizing the ancestral knowledge of batok to create future practitioners and reawaken the spiritual significance with Filipinos now and into the future. Manong Lane, I'm beyond excited to welcome you to the Casual Temple.
Thank you for having me here.
Thank you. Oh gosh. Yes. So recently had my batok ceremony with you and your two apprentices, Shane and Maya, who are, you know, you all are just lovely people, and it was such a wonderful experience. I basically can't shut up about it. Any person that I haven't seen in a while gets to hear the whole story. It's just been so cool. I know your story of how you got started, but would you mind sort of, you know, walking us through a little version of that and start at the beginning?
Sure. So it's kind of a funny story because people ask me a lot, you know, just how did you get started in all of this? And, you know, what made you go down this pathway, et cetera? And I say, well, I was a Mormon missionary. And they're like, what? And yeah, so when I was, I grew up and was raised Mormon. Mm-hmm. On my dad's side, come from a long line of Mormons. I'm no longer a practicing Mormon, but, when I was 19 years old, I did the whole Mormon missionary thing, or you wear a white shirt and a tie and you knock on people's doors and all that kind of stuff. But in the Mormon church, the young men are expected to become missionaries, and you don't get to pick where you go. They just assign you to a place. And so I got assigned to do missionary work in Hawaii. And while I was in Hawaii, there were things that seemed very, very familiar, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And I thought, you know, this feels oddly familiar. I know I'm not Hawaiian, but something's resonating. And at first I noticed linguistic similarities, and then, you know, customs, practices that were similar. And then I thought, well, maybe there is some kind of relationship here. And this was back in 1989. So this is a long time ago. This is pre-internet. This is, you know, before any genetic studies or anything that show now that there is a relationship genetically as well as culturally, et cetera, between the peoples of the Philippines and the peoples of the Pacific. We're all Austronesian-speaking people, Austronesian cultures. But back then, we didn't have any of that. You know, Filipinos are usually cubbyholed into the category of Asian. Okay, so yeah, now we know that genetically, linguistically, culturally, we are related to other peoples in the Pacific as Austronesian-speaking cultures. Anyway, back then we didn't have any of that information, and Filipinos generally were lumped in with Southeast Asians. And all these designations are Western terms anyway, you know, our ancestors didn't call themselves Asians or Pacific Islanders or even Filipinos. Those are all names that have been given to us. But there was something about Hawaiian culture that really resonated with me. And one of those things that kind of enamored me while I was there was tattoos. On our Polynesian cousins, I noticed these beautiful tattoos, and I had a desire to be tattooed myself, but I didn't want to appropriate anything that didn't belong to me. Mm-hmm. And that's where my research started, was when I got done with my missionary work, I started doing research. And at first it was just, you know, looking at commonalities between our different cultures and piecing them together. You know, this is similar to that, you know, the word for I in the Philippines is mata. It's the same in most of Polynesia. Hawaiian, they just change the T to a K. They say maka. But I started recording all of these things down in some spiral notebooks. And the notes became papers, and the papers became books. But I really didn't have any intention of becoming a practitioner. I wanted to get tattooed, but I didn't want to do it. One reason for that is my religion at the time. Mm-hmm. I was still a practicing Mormon. And also, I didn't feel qualified to do the tattooing because I'm a mixie. Mm-hmm. My dad is American of English and Scandinavian descent. My mom's from the Philippines. And so I was pretty hesitant to do that. I was happy to sit in the role of a scholar or researcher, didn't want to do any of the practice. And my mentor at the time, Suluwape Kione Nunez of Hawaii, he was like, you've got to write all this stuff down. You have to publish these books, because if you die, Lane, what's going to happen to all that knowledge you've accumulated over the years?
Right.
And he kind of shamed me into publishing the first book. And so I got it done. I almost didn't publish it because I just thought, who's going to be interested in ancient types of tattooing? You know, this seems like very niche. Mm-hmm. But he encouraged me. He shamed me into doing it. And I got the book published. And I thought, okay, my responsibility is over. And then Kione says, well, now you have to put it into practice. I'm like, oh, man. I don't want to do that. And I was resistant to doing it until my dad called me up one day and he told me he had cancer. And of course, he wanted to fight it and everything. So I was going with him to some of his appointments, and they determined that they wanted to do radiation treatment for him. And they made these marks on these, they in Sharpie on his body, these targets for the computer to, you know, aim the radiation at. And they told him, Mr. Wilkin, we'd like to tattoo these targets on you so that we don't have to do the measurements every time. And that'll just free up your time and you can spend more time with your family. My dad had a really aggressive form of cancer called mesothelioma. And so they weren't even looking at saving him, so to speak, just extending his life. But he went home and he talked to me and he said, you know, They want to tattoo the radiation targets on me, but I don't want a man I don't know with a machine I don't know touching my body. You've been studying tattooing for all these years. Would you tattoo the targets on me? Mm-hmm. And I couldn't tell my dad no. We set a day to do that. I made a very simple tool with a wooden dowel and a lemon thorn and got some India ink. My brother John stretched the skin for me and I hand tapped those tattoos on my dad. Those were the first tattoos I had done ever. Mm-hmm. And my dad, he passed away a few months later and actually never got the radiation treatment. But I had told some friends about my experience with my father, and my friends in the Filipino community in Northern California, they said, would you be willing to do it for us? And I said, yeah, if it's small, I guess I could do that. And you know, how do I go about doing this though? You know, tattooing radiation targets is one thing. Tattooing mm-hmm. cultural tattoos is a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
And my mentor, Kione, he said, well, you got to have prayers to do it. And that was a big problem because of colonization. A lot of these traditions have been lost in the Philippines. Mm-hmm. To the point that a lot of Filipinos don't know that tattooing was commonplace in the old days. But it was demonized as people, you know, converted to different religions and Christian religions. And so nowadays, you know, a lot of people still don't know, in spite of all the work that people, you know, other scholars and myself have done, you know, it's still not very common knowledge. And but anyway, the original rituals in most places in the Philippines have been lost. And so with Kione encouraging me to do it, to practice, but I needed to have prayers, I consulted with my mom. And in my family, my mom taught me the prayers that were taught to her by her mother that were for the purpose of doing atang, which is Atang in Ilocano, which is my mother's ethnic group and language. Mangatang is the person who does the atang or does the prayers to summon the ancestors. And that's done for a whole host of reasons. It could be for healing. It could be for soul retrieval. It could be to honor those that have passed. And she taught me those prayers. So I'm the Mangatang of my family. And with my mother's help, we reworded, we adapted our family's prayers to be more specific about for doing batok or doing our traditional tattoos mm-hmm. as kind of a placeholder for when or if it's even possible for us to recover those original prayers, which after 30 years of research, I'm pretty doubtful, unless you know, like the Vatican has it recorded somewhere or, you know, some Jesuit priest or something has it written down in a manuscript somewhere, but I'm not real hopeful about that. So using our family's prayers to invite the old ones to come and participate in the patok ceremony, I started tattooing a few of my friends, and then word started spreading around. This was in 2013. Word started getting spread around that there was this guy who knew how to do batok. And so people began asking me and referring their friends to me. And before I knew it, people started calling me a Mama Batok. And Mama Batok is a very loaded title. I don't know that I'm entirely worthy of that. But I do my best to serve the community in that role. The Mamba Batok is considered a healer as well as a tattooist. They are a spiritual guide. Mm-hmm. And the term batok in Ilocano can mean tattoo, but it also means to dive, to dive down. Now, among the Itnug people, who I have lineage to as well, there's a ritual where a young man will dive into the river and he will catch a fish in his bare hands and he'll bring it up to the surface. And then he is declared the mamabatok, the diver, a person who dives into the water. Now, this goes back to our, this is symbolic of our afterlife beliefs. In the ancient Philippines, as well as in Polynesia and other parts of the Pacific, when you died, you went to the underworld of the dead. And that's often thought to be across an impassable body of water or beneath the ocean. And this is the realm of the ancestors. It's a figure of speech, really. Excuse me. It's a figure of speech, really. The reason for it's figurative is because it's a reference to our maritime traditions in the old days. When you sail away from a landmass, because of the curvature of the earth, the farther you sail away from it, it seems to sink into the horizon or go into the ocean. Figuratively, it goes into the underworld. It's not unlike how Americans might describe Australia being as down under.
Right.
It's not literally underneath us. It's on the other side of the planet. And so diving into the water and bringing back a fish and being declared the mamabatok in the Itnug ritual, it's symbolic of diving into the underworld of the dead and bringing back nourishment. So that is one of the functions of the mamabatok, is to bring that nourishment to the living from the ancestors in the form of our tattoos. And so, again, I don't entirely feel worthy of that. People call me a mamabatok, and I do some healing work. I do my best to fulfill that responsibility, but I don't know that I'm fully qualified for that. And it's been a tremendous blessing in my life to assist our people in recovering their identities, in recovering their identity as people of the Philippines and being connected to the ancestors. One of the purposes of our tattoos is for us to have a stronger relationship with those on the other side. That's one of the main reasons for it. It's a spiritual enhancement of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the reasons why we have to have prayers when we do these tattoos, because in our tradition, it is considered rude to talk about behind another person's back. And that even includes the dead.
Right.
So if you're going to be talking about your ancestors, there has to be some physical manifestation of them, you know, something that represents them, or they have to be summoned so that you, as we tattoo this visual language on a person's body, they are not being excluded from that conversation.
Right.
And so in the prayers that I do, I invite the old ones to come and participate in the tattooing, as well as recognize the batok that we are doing, because we are honoring them through this practice. And the prayers as well as offerings to the dead are given at that time. Before we can even begin tattooing, we have to do these prayers and we have to make these offerings so that they are appeased, because a lot of these designs are stylized representations of ancestors, either in their human form or the physical manifestation, which might be a plant, it could be a mountain, it could be a celestial body, any number of things that represent them physically. It's not always explicit. It's sometimes implicit designs that denote an ancestor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of my practice in a nutshell, or how I got started anyway, is, yeah, I was a Mormon missionary.
And here's the, yeah, and here's the through line of how that happened. Oh, I loved how you explained the definition of the Mamba Batok and then the diving. Because when you were explaining it, it kind of, the sort of similar image I was getting was when people talk about Michelangelo and he would do the statue, he would mm-hmm. start with the block of marble or whatever. And he was like, they would say, well, how do you do that? How do you get David out of that? And he was like, well, he was already in there. I just brought it out. You know, he was already there. So when you were describing sort of diving and how that was, you know, it's like the similar term is used. I was like, oh, maybe it's sort of like mm-hmm. they were already there and you're just bringing it to the surface, which I think is like a cool image.
Yeah. A lot of people have mentioned that to me, that mm-hmm. it feels like after we get the work done, it feels like it's always been there.
Yeah.
Or that I just brought it to the surface.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So maybe, you know, maybe the title works. The title seems to work for me. but I get it.
Thank you.
Yeah. So kind of before we talk about, because I did definitely want to talk about the ceremony itself, because it was so cool. But what are some things that you wanted to dispel, if anything, about Filipino cultural tattooing?
Well, there's kind of the misunderstanding, and some people have perpetuated this misunderstanding, unfortunately, and it might be due to their own ignorance, that the meanings are secret, that they cannot be revealed, that you can't share what the designs are with other people, otherwise it'll lose its power. And that's not true. Mm. You have to remember that in the old days, this is a form of, you know, visual language. And you could, by looking at a person and seeing their designs, know what ethnic group they belong to. You might, and you need to know that, because they might be a village that's friendly to yours. They might be an enemy of yours. You have to know the difference.
Right.
But it also denotes their rank and their position in society. So there are marks specifically for healers, for example. And you would know by their markings that this person had the capacity to help you. Or if they were a high-ranking chief, you would recognize that, or you would recognize that that person's a warrior, and you'd know to step out of their path, you know, to show deference to that person. So it functioned in many different ways in our ancient society, as well as was used for healing purposes. That correlates with acupuncture. If you're familiar with acupuncture, it is placed over specific parts of the body to enhance a person's health. If you compare the layout of our tattoos from what has been recorded in old manuscripts, like the designs that were recorded by Father Francisco Alsina, or the designs that are recorded in the box codex and the layout on the body, they correlate with the placement of, those placements correlate with meridian lines in the body and specific acupuncture points. And so when you tattoo over that place or that spot, you are permanently charging that with energy. It's like wearing black clothing and going out in the sun. You feel the heat from mm-hmm. solar energy as it's absorbing it. And it's the same with a black tattoo. It's absorbing solar energy into that specific spot. And through my research, I've been able to realize that our ancestors did this very intentionally. They were augmenting a person's health by tattooing them. And my school, Kata'o Living Traditions, and I, we actually participated in a research study that shows the immunological benefits of being tattooed. People with more tattoos have a stronger immune system. But a lot of the time, people are doing this without that understanding. and specific types of tattoos. Different colors absorb different spectrums of light. The soot-based ink that we use, our indigenous inks, are made from soot. And that is what's considered light-absorbing carbon. It absorbs a spectrum of light that is between 300 nanometers and 800 nanometers. And that happens to be the beneficial frequencies of light, near infrared and near ultraviolet, that are beneficial to our bodies. Wow. So I don't know that our ancestors understood, 300 nanometers or
right,
whatever, but they understood it worked. Mm-hmm. And so it's a very intentional practice that we do. And I don't deviate from those traditional layouts because of that.
Wow. Yeah, it was very cool. And I was telling you before we chatted, because I had emailed you, I was like, oh, this is what I kind of experienced in like the days following the Batok, where I was like feeling there was a lot of flow and there was, I had like dropped a bunch of weight all of a sudden, which has not happened for me, even though I've been intentionally trying to drop weight. So I was like, wow, there's all this flow happening. And then I went and saw my acupuncturist and she was like, yeah, basically the lines where you got the tattoo is flow. And it is there to balance, the male energy with the female energy in your body. And I was like, oh my gosh, well, there you go. Boom. Lines up. So it was very cool.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, definitely. Okay. Definitely want to talk about the ceremony, because basically when I do tell everybody, I was like, yeah, I was there for 10 hours and they're like, what? 10 hours, almost 10 hours. What? So if you don't mind kind of walking us through sort of the steps, I know like a lot of that is sort of discussion and chatting and getting to know each other and finding out, so you can kind of get a picture of what to actually put on my body. But would you mind sort of walking mm-hmm. us through that?
Yeah. So based on the person's specific ethnic group from the Philippines, there are certain designs and layouts on the body. And, if you're like you, if you're a Waray, then there's kind of a palette of designs that I could potentially choose from for that layout. But which of those designs is most pertinent to the individual, that's fleshed out in our conversations. I don't have anything usually pre-meditated before I go into it. I do meditate before mm-hmm. a person comes over. I do also prayers before a person comes over. And sometimes I get a general understanding of what might go there, mm-hmm. but that doesn't really gel until I have a conversation with the person. And then the specific designs are shown to me, so to speak.
Right.
And so the first little while is just us getting to know each other. In all of our rituals in the Philippines, there's feasting. So we take time to eat. We take time to drink a little bit, not alcohol, but we just eat and drink a little bit and get to know each other a little better so that those things can gel for me. Mm-hmm. And then once that happens, once I have a good idea of what designs need to be there and who needs to be represented, sometimes it's a deity, sometimes it's an ancestor, then I draw the designs on the person's body. And that's when I explain all the designs. I explain what they mean, what they symbolize, what their names are. And some of the designs are mnemonic devices to remember oral history. So if you have a lightning pattern, there's a deity that's attached to it, or multiple deities, depending on, where you're from. And there are often stories that go along with those designs. So if I am to do my due diligence and do this practice in a good way, I need to make sure that the person understands what those designs mean and represent so that mm-hmm. they are literate in their own markings. Part of our purpose with Kata'o Living Traditions is to help our people become literate again in our markings. so that we can read them again, so that we can recognize each other again. And so I would be doing the recipient a disservice by not telling them what they have, and then it's just pretty designs.
Right.
So I have to explain all of that to a person, and sometimes those explanations can take a long time.
Mm-hmm.
I think you and I, we spent at least at the bare minimum an hour of explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then it has to resonate with the individual.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to feel like it belongs up at that point. Then we move forward to the ritual stuff. And that's when we would do the prayers and the offerings to the old ones. And we do a few other prayers too. So if the design is for a specific deity, then we invoke that deity before we tattoo them. We don't want to talk, so to speak, behind their back.
Mm-hmm.
So if I remember correctly, at the beginning of your tattooing, I invoked a moon deity.
Yes.
So that she would be present while we tattooed the moon patterns on your body. So during those prayers, of course, we want to keep it solemn. We want to keep it respectful to the spirits that we're inviting. And but once those prayers are done and the tapping begins, then the mood is allowed to be lighter. And it's what we call liliwa. It means to entertain, distract, but also to comfort or to console a person,
mm-hmm.
all of the above. There's no verbatim translation into English, but the mood's allowed to be lighter, and we want the person to get through the experience the best that they can. So we can joke around a little bit, you know, and I've had people come and play music for us while we work, you know, with indigenous instruments or, you know, whatever we need to do to help the person navigate the pain. Some people have a very high pain tolerance. Some people don't. It's usually the males.
Right. Yeah.
But, yeah, they squirm a lot more. But, yeah, then we do the work. And I mean, if you want to share about how that was for you.
Like I said at the beginning, you and your apprentices are just so much fun. And I know people might not know this if they have either gone to a Filipino party or have like hung out with a bunch of Filipinos. We do like to joke around and make lighthearted jokes. Sometimes, you know, depending on which kind of Filipinos you get to, they can be a little more cutting, but that was not my experience with you guys. You were just a lot of fun. So yeah, I enjoyed that quite a bit because I was like, oh, I remember this when we were growing up, my mom would have her Filipino friends over and it would just be a lot of laughing and a lot of like singing and, you know, just, you know, learning about each other. And yeah, I was like, oh, it reminded me of a lot of that. And so it was really special. But yeah, and I liked that, you know, we played some music, we talked a lot about music because that's like so huge part of my life. So I really appreciated that. But yeah, it definitely, I did not feel like I have, you know, if you guys want to see my Instagram post.
Zaxby's just out Philly the Philly again. The Zaxby's Chicken Philly is back with garlic aioli, sauteed peppers and onions, decadent melty cheese, and your choice of Zaxby's signature crispy chicken fingers or delicious grilled chicken. But it's only back for a limited time, so enjoy it while you can. No pressure. It's just the greatest sandwich of all time on a ticking clock. Order the Chicken Philly today. Who's got the sauce? Zaxby's.
I have pictures of the tattoo that Lane gave me and like talked all about it. But it didn't hurt at all. If I would have fallen asleep. But you know, it is like, you know, physically draining for you. And it is, even though it didn't hurt, it was still physically draining for me too. Cause you have like three people pressing and stretching the skin. Which is really funny to me because I was showing my sister my arm. I was like, oh yeah, there's all this like bruising on the arm. because, and it wasn't from the tattoos, it was from the stretching, right? Stretching of the skin. Yeah.
They're very strong. My students are very strong.
Very strong. Yeah, that was strong. But yeah, it was just so much fun. And then another thing that I, you know, because you mentioned like drinking, and we drank a lot of kava, which I had told you guys that I literally had kava a couple of weeks prior, because my friend, when we went to Australia, she was like, we need to drink kava, but we totally did it the absolute wrong way. And basically drink dirt is essentially what we did. So I did want to talk a little bit about kava. Maybe folks aren't aware of it. Like, what is it? Why do we drink kava when we're doing the batok?
Okay. So I was trained by Polynesians. There was no one to teach me how to make the ancient tattooing implements of the Philippines that have been found in excavations. And that skill set had been lost. Mm. Now, there are still people that tattoo in the Philippines. Still, there's some ethnic groups there. But these most ancient tools, that skill set has been lost through colonization. And so the Polynesians, who recognized that we were related, and this would be the Suluape family of Samoa, they had taken it upon themselves to reintroduce the skill set and the technology to tattoo to the cousins. And that included the Philippines. And I was very fortunate to be taught. So the tools that we use are made out of wood and bone. Different types of bone for different characteristics that are to be bequeathed to the individual. So, for example, an albatross swing bone is one of the implements that I used on you. It's to give the person the ability to be like the albatross, to fly long, long distances with and not require the rest. So things like that. But the skill set to create these combs of teeth or needles out of a single bone, that's something that I had to be taught. And I'm very grateful to the Suluape family, and especially to my teacher, Kione, for teaching me how to do this so that our people could have it again, so that our people could experience what our ancestors experienced. And so out of respect for my teachers, out of respect for the culture that they come from, and they include kava in their ceremonies. Kava, for those of you that may not know, is the root of a type of pepper plant, which is related to black pepper, not chilies, black pepper. And the root is ground up and made into a type of tea, cold steeped and then wrung out of the bag. That's the mistake that your friends yep. and you made, is that you just kind of mixed it in water. It has to be in a bag
yep.
to be steeped, so you don't drink dirt.
Yep.
but the kava is a natural anti-inflammatory and a muscle relaxant and a mild analgesic, so it pairs very well with tattooing. And according to what I was told and taught, the deities or ancestors that govern tattooing are also the deities that govern kava. And so out of respect for them, we drink kava in my school. I'm also adopted into a Hawaiian family, so I also drink it out of respect for my family. But kava is also found in the Philippines, although it's not used ceremonially anymore. In the Philippines, there are a few terms for it. Buyo buyo or kuyo or kuyot or kolrot, but it's no longer used ceremonially. Mm-hmm. And we do have the same deities under slightly different names in the Philippines as well. So it's not too big of a jump for us to include it in our ceremonies, but I'm transparent with people that we don't know that kava was part of our ancient ceremonies of tattooing. But in my school, out of respect for the lineage of my tools that come from the Samoans, we drink kava out of respect for them and for our mutual ancestors. So yeah, we drank quite a bit of Clavo while you were here.
I think I was like, I think it's like five, at least five times for sure. We like did at least five rounds, if not more. Mm-hmm. When my sister, I asked my sister, I was like, how many times did you, she was like, I think she said only maybe once or twice. I was like, ugh, we did a lot. I was like, bring it on. Bring it to the so, it was very cool.
Yeah, it's great. The more relaxed a person is, the more relaxed their skin is, and I don't have to tap as hard.
Yeah.
So, you know, that might be why your skin was so receptive and it wasn't as painful for you.
Yeah, for sure. And then the other thing too that I did want to mention, like I had told you as we were talking sort of throughout the night that I do have other machine tattoos, and a couple of them I got and I didn't really like the person who tattooed them on me. And a couple that I did get, I was like, I really enjoyed the person that did it. So I said, wow, you know, I wish at every time you get a tattoo that you can like have this like length of time to sit with the people and really get to know them. And so that you feel like they actually care about you and aren't just like trying to get you done and get you out the door. And that's not your process at all.
Right.
Yeah. So I love that.
Yeah. It's a huge responsibility for us to adorn people with batok. Mm-hmm. And there's a relationship that happens there. There is an exchange that happens there energetically. Something that my teacher taught me about is that, yeah, there's an exchange that happens there energetically, and we have to be respectful of that. And so, some of that exchange is just getting to know the individual too. Mm-hmm. You know, you come in as a recipient, you leave as a friend.
Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely how it felt for sure, which is great. And sort of another thing that I was explaining to people was, well, the main thing was, I remember you were tapping and you were talking to somebody who wasn't in the room, but I could see at least. And you kept mentioning like, oh no, you're having a conversation with somebody. And so when we took a break, I was like, hey, Manong Lane, like, who are you talking to exactly? Because you were addressing Apo. So I wasn't sure if it was your Apo, my Apo. But yeah, it was like very interesting that there's like spirit contact during the ceremony, or it can happen.
It's not uncommon. I'm not trying to make it not special or anything like that, but it's not uncommon for that to happen, especially when a person is loved by those on the other side. Mm-hmm. They end up showing up. And I realized this the first time I did actual cultural tattooing after my father. This woman that I was working on, she was a Phil-Am or Filipino-American, mm-hmm. and was very disconnected from the culture. Didn't know anything really, especially about ancient culture, I would say. But she started having kind of a waking vision while I was tapping her. Mm-hmm. And she said, I see this elder man, and he's dressed in red, and he's got this red, I don't know what it is, but it's like a turban kind of thing that he has on his head. And I knew exactly what she was describing. She was describing the attire of a chief. And I thought it was kind of an epiphany. It's like, holy crap, I summoned them and they came.
Right. Wow. Yeah. And
you know, over the years that I've been working, we have quite a few experiences where all of a sudden the room will feel crowded. Mm-hmm. I think with you it felt hot.
Yeah.
In the room. There were too many people, and there was just my two apprentices and I and you.
Yeah.
And it felt like when I was having that conversation, it felt like someone was like hovering over my shoulder, like, and asking me to do something. I'm like, I can't do that this time. I need to wrap this up kind of thing. But you had an ancestor that was like wanting more.
Right. Yeah. not saying that that's my family, but that's my family.
Yeah, that's your family.
That's too funny.
Oh my gosh.
Other times they'll be like a perfume that'll come into the space, and I'll say, you know, do you smell that? You know, and the recipient will go, yeah, and then like it smells like roses or something, and they'll start crying like, this is my grandmother's perfume.
Oh wow, yeah.
Had another experience where it was a person from Iloilo down south, and I started smelling roasted fish, and it's a particular dish. I don't even remember the name of it, but I said, do you smell roasted fish? And she starts getting kind of weepy, and she goes, that's my uncle who passed away. That was his. She named the dish, and it was broiled fish. And so he was present, you know. Other times, you know, with deities in particular, there are sometimes wind spirits. And if we're putting their designs on the person, there will be a random wind that'll blow through the area to let us know that they're present.
Wow.
So it's not just you know, coincidences. I mean, it's happened so many times that we can't chalk it up to coincidence or anything like that. It's the presence of those that are unseen. And so that's why, you know, that's one of the biggest differences between modern tattooing or, you know, Western tattooing, if you want to call it that, and doing indigenous practices, is that this is a ritual. And even though we have fun and we can joke around and have luliwa, it's still a ritual. Mm-hmm. And it's still a spiritual experience.
Yeah. I did have a question about sort of the being sensitive to spirit communication. Was that something you've always had, or was it, it became more apparent when you started doing the batok?
Interestingly enough, although I would say my ability comes from my mom's side and my grandmother, etc. The person who taught me to be aware of it was my father.
Oh.
And it was actually in church. He was like, he noticed that I got chills for no reason. He was like, what are you feeling? And I said, I've got a chill for no reason. I think it was like 12. And he says, you know, that's the Holy Spirit speaking to you, Lane. And I'm like, oh yeah. Mm-hmm. And now I am no longer a practicing Mormon or anything like that. You know, I'm a pretty far removed now, but understanding when I had a spiritual experience, that was really important in my development. Mm-hmm. I would say, because it taught me to be aware. And that is actually one of the traditional signs that a spirit is present in our traditions in the Philippines, is it will get cold for no reason, or you'll have a chill for no reason. That's one of the signs that a spirit is present.
Yes.
And so after a while of just recognizing that, my father says, now, you know, when that happens, what you need to do, Lane, is, what is going through your head or your heart at the time? What are you thinking about, or what is happening around you? So he kind of compared it to the chill, using the chill as an example, as the phone ringing. But it's up to me to pick up the phone.
Right.
And realize what is being communicated. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I developed initially as a Mormon. But then, you know, tattooing is a sin. So I was really surprised when I started tattooing and I was having chills for no reason. I'm like, okay, I'm having a spiritual experience, even though I'm doing something that's technically a sin.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on here?
Yeah.
But again, you know, when I would have those experiences, what I was supposed to do is still my heart and my mind and allow whatever communication to happen that needs to happen to happen.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like when you get a phone call and there's no caller ID and you pick up the phone and it's like, hey, Lane, how's it going? You know, that was so dope the other day. And you're like, I don't know who this is.
Exactly.
Who is this? And you're just like, yeah, bro, that was cool. And you're like fishing for like, who is this person?
Yes.
But as you become more and more familiar with that voice, you're like, oh, that's so-and-so, you know. Mm-hmm. And pretty soon you don't need to have them identify themselves. You just recognize their tone, or you recognize the feeling that they give off. Mm-hmm. So you start recognizing specific spirits, specific individuals. Wow. And so that's how, you know, I kind of developed my spiritual sensitivity, and you know, the more that you communicate with them, the more they want to communicate with you. Mm-hmm. Out of all the descendants that an ancestor might have, how many people are paying attention?
Right.
You know, very few people pay attention, and especially in Western culture, I would say we're taught to ignore it. You know, mm-hmm. we're, you know, the rational mind overrules everything, and I'm not saying that we shouldn't use our rational mind, mm-hmm. but the intuitive mind is also important. It's just as important. Yeah. And in my opinion, probably more important. We didn't have Google back in the day. If you wanted to learn something, you asked your elders in the village, and if they didn't have an answer, then you appealed to those who had gone beyond. That was the Google. Mm-hmm. You're tapping into a lineage of wisdom and knowledge that far exceeds your own. And I've had experiences with that too. There are times, one particular example I'll give is when I was trying to figure out how to make the kisi, or the tattooing tools of the Kalinga people, that was made out of a carabao horn. Carabao, for those of you that may not know, is a water buffalo that we have in the Philippines. And they would take a piece of carabao horn and they would bend it at a right angle and attach the needles to it perpendicular to the handle. And that's the tattooing implement that is tapped. Now, the last person that I know of that had the ability to make those types of tools died in 2001. And they're not made anymore. The type of gisi or kisi that's made out of the carabao horn they're not found anymore. And I really was kind of down to try and figure out how that was made. And it wasn't until I was in a still place, you know, when my mind was quiet, that I had attempted several times to bend the horn, all failing. Would broke a whole bunch of blanks trying to do it. And then one day when my mind was still, thought comes into my head, you need to soak it overnight in water.
Mm.
Oh, okay. Had the chill, got that thought went into my head, you know, okay, I'll soak it overnight in water. And I had been trying to fire bend it, but I hadn't soaked it overnight.
And, right.
The next day I pulled it out of the bucket I had submerged it in, and I won't tell you my whole process, that's proprietary knowledge, but the next day I was able to bend it to that right angle. And so very specific types of knowledge can be given to a person, you know, mm-hmm. from that other side. They want to share their knowledge with you, but again, how many of us are listening?
Yeah. Exactly.
One of the other experiences I'll share briefly is when I was, this was in 2001, I was still doing the research for Filipino tattoos, ancient to modern, and I had reached a kind of an impasse in my research. I could not fit, I had designs, but I didn't know the names of the designs. I just found that these patterns, and I was really frustrated. I couldn't figure out how to get any more knowledge about them. And I went to bed one night and I had a dream. And in this dream, this old man wearing a white loincloth, a white bahag, he's standing in the middle of the forest, and he kind of beckoned to me to follow him. So I followed him through the forest, and we got to this big banyan tree that was cut down. And he had me lean up against it, sit down, lean up my back against it, which, you know, is very symbolic. If you know our traditions around balete or banyan trees. But he grabbed my arm, pulled it towards him, and there were all these tattoos on my arm. And he started explaining all the designs and meanings. And it was such a vivid dream. I woke up from it, and I wrote the dream down. The next night, I went to sleep. Same thing happened. The same exact dream happened, where he explained all the designs to me. And, you know, I woke up from that dream, and I'm like, wow, that was really powerful. But as time went on, you know, throughout the day, I thought, well, what if this is just my subconscious trying to figure out a way around this impasse in my research? You know, what if this is just me trying to, you know, figure it out? Mm-hmm. Well, that night I went to bed and had another dream, and the old man was there in my apartment at the foot of my bed, this old lakai. And he was mad. He grabbed me and he pulled me out of the bed, took me to the mirror in the bathroom, and said, look at your face. And I looked in the mirror, and all the tattoos were on my face now. And then he went through the lesson again.
Wow.
And I woke up from that dream like, okay, Apo, okay, grandfather, I know this isn't my subconscious now. I know that you're trying to communicate with me. But who in their right mind is going to say, you know, when I write this scholarly book, oh, by the way, this is what this design means because I had a dream about it. Everyone's going to laugh at me.
Mm-hmm.
But because he had identified the designs to me, it gave me a direction to research.
Right.
And about 6 months later, I found the documentation for everything he had explained.
And amazing.
So
I was, yeah.
So that's one of my my secrets to, now out in the public, I guess.
Yeah.
One of the secrets to my research for Filipino tattoos, ancient to modern, is that some of the knowledge was given beforehand.
Yeah.
And I just had to go find the proof.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, it is interesting the way that we're taught, at least in the West, is to question. Well, one, it's so terrible in a lot of ways. It's like to question the feelings in your body and to question like these things that happen to you. You're like, but that's, you know, that it's not a dream. You know that, it, you know what I mean? You're like, I know that. I know how my mm-hmm. dreams work, you know? So I think it's really special that you could look at it and then use it, you know, it was an aid to your research, which I think is really something. As far as like not to kind of fix all the wrongs of colonialism, I do think that a lot of that is going to come from these, that communication that mm-hmm. everybody around the world who has suffered from it, I think getting that back in touch with the ancestors to figure out like where all that lost information can be resurfaced again. So I think that's such a cool example. It's like, gets me jazzed up.
Well, I really hope that people lean into it more. And even those that were considered colonizers, you know, long ago, they were colonized themselves and come from indigenous traditions that couldn't be recovered. And there's wisdom there, you know, just because, you know, we like to think of ourselves as the most technologically advanced, the most advanced humans that ever existed. But people were not stupid for thousands and thousands of years.
Right.
There's a wealth of knowledge there, you know?
Yes.
We just have to tap into it. No pun intended.
Right. Yeah. Pun intended. Come on. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Definitely. I want more of that for our future. And, you know, like you said, it's been around for that. If they weren't doing what they were doing for thousands of years, we wouldn't be here, yo. So like, think about that.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we're kind of wrapping up here, but I wonder if you do have some ways for folks, whether they're Filipino or not, maybe, that they can start having their own connection to their ancestors. What is something that you would recommend?
Well, first and foremost, I would say is establish a relationship with your elders that you have now, whether that's your parents, grandparents, and if you're fortunate to know your great grandparents, get to know your elders and pick their brains. Get to know them. You know, how are you going to have a relationship with those that are ancient if you can't have a relationship with those that are here?
Right.
So I would encourage everyone to tap into what you have in front of your face right now. Mm-hmm. And then also work on your spiritual life, you know, whatever that looks like, you know, work on your spiritual sensitivity, you know, so that you can recognize the voices when they call. Mm-hmm. In our traditions, you didn't want to go around and have a relationship with randos, you know, with random spirits. You wanted to have a relationship with those that were from your lineage, from your family.
Right.
Those are the ones that have a vested interest in your well-being. The random spirit or deity may not. They may not have your interest at heart. They might be demanding. They might want, you know, sacrifices or you jump through certain hoops, whereas your family loves you.
Yeah.
And they care about you as long as you show them the respect. Again, it's like your grandparents, you know, when we are in front of our grandparents, you know, we want to treat them with a certain amount of deference and respect. And if you can't do that in this life, how can you do it with those that are beyond? So, you know, having those types of relationships, in our old belief system, if you don't take care of them, that relationship, you're going to lose the relationship.
Right.
If you have a relationship with the ancestress, for example, and you don't maintain the relationship, you're going to lose the relationship. So the first thing is to establish the relationship, and then recognize when they're calling, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then have the courage to act on it. Have the courage to act on their wisdom. If I had, you know, when I had those thoughts planted in my head about how to bend the Karabal horn to make the kisi, if I didn't act on that, I would have never known and never had the confirmation that it was communication from the other side. You find out whether or not it's actual communication or not by the repercussions of what they ask you to do or what they're teaching you.
Mm-hmm.
If it turns out to be something bad, maybe it wasn't, you know, maybe it wasn't the right person, you know. Get to know them as individuals. Yeah, not just as some vague apparition or entity, you know, get to know them as individuals. But that's what I would encourage. And regardless of your ethno-linguistic background, you know, whether you're from the Philippines or other places, you know, everybody has ancestors. Everybody has traditions that go with those ancestors. You know, do your due diligence and explore that. You know, don't appropriate somebody else's practice just because that's available.
Mm-hmm.
It's so rewarding to find your own, traditions. That's one of the pitfalls that I see with some Filipino Americans is that, yes, we are related to Polynesians, but we are not quite the same. You know,
right.
They have their own nuances. Same goes with Native people that are a little more distantly related. You know, a lot of Filipinos end up adopting Native practices, and that's not certainly not appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
We have commonalities, we have similarities, and it might resonate with us, but find out why it resonates with you.
Yeah.
You know, and then dive into your own background and see what your people have to offer. If you want to get tattooed, for example, I won't mention any names, but I've had people, you know, come to me and say, hey, I want Filipino tattoos. And I'm like, well, there are circumstances in which we can do that if you're not Filipino.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to be part of our community. You have to participate in our community to receive those markings. If you're not, then what I do is I encourage people to to dive into their own background and find their own ancestral markings. And from what I've found in my own research is that most cultures throughout the world had some form of body adornment or modification. It just needs to be recovered and woken back up. It might have been asleep for a long time, but you can wake it back up.
Cool. That's great advice. All right. So what are some, I usually also, my second closing thing is, what are some projects or events that you have coming up, if any, that you want to let us know about?
Let's see. Well, I am writing an article for a magazine.
Cool.
I can't divulge to the public what magazine that is, but it's a prominent magazine.
Nice.
That'll be coming out in the future, in the next few months. But I am low-key working on writing another book.
Well,
it's about time. It's about time for me to do that. And I'll be doing some more lectures throughout the year at various places. I'm going to be doing the soonest one is I'm going to be doing a lecture workshop series over on the Isle of Kauai in Hawaii in February. So I got that coming up. And if you want to keep your tabs on me, you can follow my social media or my website.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool. Yeah, they'll definitely, I'll put all the links in the show notes. Well, thank you so much, Lane. You've already, and we close with this, you've already shared so much wisdom, but do you have any sort of final words of wisdom that you want to leave us with today?
Just, you know, search for your ancestors and they will find you.
Beautifully said. Oh, well, thank you so much, Manong. This is lovely. I'm so thankful that you made the time to chat with me. Thank you so much.
Happy to do it.
I could listen to Lane go on for hours, as he is a font of knowledge and has really thoughtful and considered ideas around Filipino indigenous practices. It really was an honor. You gotta check out the show notes to learn more about Lane and the Katao School of Living Traditions. Do remember to like, follow, and subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. It really helps us grow. Thank you for listening and being an important part of the Casual Temple.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger, and you can get started now by saving when you join today. We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need, and you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save. Just $1 down, $15 a month. See Home Club for details.